Hey, this is Collarworks Radio, and I'm your host, Justin Baker. With me this week is Bradley Biancardi, painter from New York City via Chicago. He's currently up at the Elizabeth Murray Artist Residency in Granville, New York, which is run by Collarworks Gallery. We sat down in Elizabeth Murray's living room couch and talked about what it means to be a figurative painter working today. Listen up. Hey, Bradley, how you doing?
Pretty good, Justin. How are you?
I'm all right. Again, we are up here. This is our second week is ending at the Elizabeth Murray Residency, and you've been here for 2 weeks. Is that right?
Almost 2 weeks, yeah. Tomorrow will be our last day, unfortunately.
How's it been going?
It's fantastic. Peaceful, beautiful, productive. It's been a great time.
That's great. So I peeked in there before you were here, but we were just out in your studio looking at your work. For the people listening who don't know, you're a painter. You're from New York. Is that right?
Currently living and working in New York, originally from Chicago.
Okay. From Chicago, and then I did a little cyber stalking. You went out to Seattle, is that right?
That's correct. That's where I received my MFA. Okay. From University of Washington in Seattle.
Okay. So you're a painter. You've made some small canvases. I think the things that I saw that got me really interested in your work were some larger, very intricate, colorful canvases. But maybe for everybody listening who is interested, maybe talk a little bit about your process and how you get to the imagery that's on the canvases. Again, we were just out in your studio, and there was some things like shoes, baseball, a cat, figures, a bunch of stuff. I think underwear was one of them. So if you want to just talk a little bit about that, what you've been up to here and maybe how you got here, that could be interesting.
Sure. So where do I start? I'm a figurative painter and drawer. I work in painting, drawing, and printmaking. I'm interested in figuration and narrative, storytelling, sort of visual storytelling. I've always loved stories and storytellers. I've admired storytellers. So that's kind of how I look at all of my work. It's all invented. It all comes from my head. It's generated through drawing. So I do lots of drawing. And I draw on the canvases, of course, preparing for the larger paintings, and then also preparing for the woodcuts that I do. So I would say that drawing is probably the most essential element of my process. That's kind of the germination of everything. Okay. Let's see. So recently, I've been making large multi-figural paintings that are that are full of narrative, full of sort of potential narrative and potential stories, but I try to stop short of literally describing everything in terms of what's going on inside of that narrative, because I hope that they remain open enough so that people can interpret them. And in that sense, I also use imagery that are stand-ins or metaphors for other events or things or people.
Can I?
Yeah.
I want to ask a quick question about the storytelling, because when I was looking through your work when you applied for the residency and, you know, a couple days ago, knowing I was going to come up here and talk to you, the storytelling seems open for anyone, but also like deeply, like kind of personal, in like creating these stories, not that it has to come from your life, but it that must in some way kind of weave its way through. Is that true or not? Or
yes, that's true. Yeah. Oftentimes, if I'm inventing characters for the paintings, they'll start to resemble people from my life or people who I've never met, but, you know, like are important to me in some other way. And then after that occurs, while I'm working on the piece, they become that person, you know? Mm-hmm. The impetus often comes from personal experience. Some of it, like you were saying, there's a baseball, there's underwear, there are tennis shoes and crowns. I try to use objects that for me have a personal, these objects begin with, my personal experience, but I like to use objects that are sort of loaded metaphorically and can be projected onto by other people who are looking at the work onto their personal experience. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's probably both, you know.
Right.
I think about abstraction a lot, both in terms of, in the traditional sense of abstraction, formally, color, space, and all that stuff, but I also think about abstraction as a vehicle that exists to in order to bridge two different ideas. In other words, when people ask you, what kind of paintings do you make? You make abstract paintings, you make figurative paintings, and then somebody answers, well, it's kind of somewhere in between the two. Mm-hmm. It's not completely non-objective and abstract. There are recognizable images, but it's right. definitely not observational or plein air painting. You know, right. I'm not looking anymore at the people and objects as I paint them. And I think about the stories in that same way. I want them to be a bit abstract, but I want them to also be overt. I want the imagery to be I'm trying to think of a specific word, but I want the scenarios to be direct and decisive, but at the same time remain sort of ambiguous.
Mm-hmm. So there's like a little, there's room for interpretation. Like people can take it mm-hmm. any way they want. One thing, just I guess, well, maybe we're on like the nuts and bolts of your work. There's also like a really beautiful sense of color and line, and like you're talking about abstraction as well. I know in some of the bigger canvases, like some of those forms and figures, the space that they're in kind of bobs and weaves a little bit. When I was looking at your work, it has like kind of like this, like the way that the colors are mixing, there's like a little bit of, it almost seemed like a kind of Bonnard way of color going down. Is maybe if you could talk about that a little bit, or even any influences when you go down those holes, I guess.
Well, I love Bonnard. I love Vuillard. I really love all modernist painting, starting with like the Impressionists and the Fauvists, and then going through like, you know, all the way to Elizabeth Murray, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But color was always a thing. You know, I was always a formidable drawer, a draftsperson, whatever you want to call it. And mm-hmm. color was kind of a mystery to me. Mm-hmm. And
oh, that's interesting.
But it was a mystery that I was continually trying. I've always continually tried to challenge myself with regards to color in my works, and it's because color is—it's kind of magical. And I've seen and worked and grown up around other painters who just have an innate ability and sense of color, and don't struggle with it at all. And I've always admired that, but that's not who I am at all. Like, color is something that I really have to think about and work on, and also allow myself to play with. So I think in the past couple of years, my paintings have changed a lot with regards to color. I try to let the colors that I choose in the paintings and the way that those colors are applied say something about the narratives or the people or the objects that I'm depicting. And that helped me, making that decision helped me to decide how to work with color in a different way. But these are all color decisions in a formal way are all things that sort of occur while I'm working on the painting. Very rarely do I have a plan at the beginning. At most I'll decide I want this painting to be mostly red or something, but it doesn't really become more specific than that. Or I want this character to be very, very warm in terms of color, and therefore be a sort of elemental focus in the narrative, you know. And that's pretty general. You know, there are lots of other painters who have much more specific idea of color before they begin. But for me, it's like it's experiential through the process of working on the paintings, and it's difficult for me. So I think I enjoy that challenge.
Yeah, that's interesting. I guess while we're here, again, in your work, there's one question I was thinking, like, as I was looking at it, and on the way up, I was driving up here. Again, we're in Granville, so I'm traveling. And I had some time to think. And there's moments of, and I saw a little bit of it in your studio, but not much. But some of your larger canvases have text in them that seems, adds like a little bit of humor, but also like a, I found it humorous in some way, but maybe you could talk about that. And the one I'm thinking of is the two figures looking at each other, and there's this ribbon that has words on it, and I'm gonna mess it up. It says something like, "We don't need a therapist," or "It's not time for the therapist," which I found kind of humorous in a way. But maybe you could talk about that.
It says, "We don't need therapists now." Oh, and then there's a third figure that's sort of behind them looking on.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, if they're funny, that's great. I think, I'm not intending for them to be either serious or funny, but I think, when you read text in a painting, it changes your experience as a viewer.
Yeah.
Like if you're far away from a painting and you're walking closer, you get a sense of, like, because of the formal elements of the painting, what's going on. And then if you read something, that's going to change however you think. So I started putting text in paintings just as a sort of compositional device, also to add another element to the narrative, also as a kind of rebellion against the academic norms of painting, because I, like you said before, I went to Seattle to pursue my MFA, but I went to Indiana University to pursue my BFA, and it was kind of a conservative painting program that focused on the technical elements of painting. And, you know, there are certain things that are taboo in especially the academic painting world. One of those things is words on paintings. Like, how can you possibly get away with putting words on paintings? It becomes something, especially a painting that's image heavy, you know? Another one of those taboos is like painting on the sides of the canvas. You know, this is sort of frowned upon. Signing the front of your work as a modernist painter from the late, 19th century would have done. Like,
Right. There
are certain things that I sort of adopted just as a form, a sort of subtle form of rebellion against my academic past, but but that stuff, I'll try it, I'll use it, I'll filter it through, maybe it will resonate and remain, maybe it won't, but those sort of text strips, I'll call them, that show up in my paintings now, I think I have somehow achieved you know, like, a productive way of using text in the paintings. So I'm gonna keep them.
Yeah.
That painting you're describing, "We Don't Need Therapists Now," that's just something that came to me as I was making that work. And I think it did make me chuckle a little bit, but often I'll take them from stories or songs or quotes of other people. I have one painting which I titled, "Winston Churchill and the History of Netflix." And in that painting, there's a character that is just reciting a Churchill quote, and the Churchill quote is one that I love, he's talking about another person. I think in real life he was talking about a British general who he didn't like, and the quote was, "He has all the virtues I dislike." I don't know. "He has all the vices I admire," and it's a and none of I'm pulling a George W. Bush right now. Anyway, it's about vice and virtue, yeah, and it's like the opposite of the normal colloquialism, but he has all the virtues I dislike and all the vices I admire. I think that's what the quote is. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Bradley. We're gonna end on Rebellion and Winston Churchill, but very nice to talk to you, and very much appreciated to talk about your work.
It was great to hang out with you too, Justin. Thanks.
Thanks again, Bradley. And as always, go check out Collarworks Gallery at 621 River Street in Troy, New York. Coming up is our Mad Collar Party and Birthday Bash, celebrating 10 years of Collarworks, Saturday, August 10th at 6 p.m. till late. With food, party, and art. Get your tickets now on our website, collarworks.org. We're on Facebook. Thanks again for listening.